Right now, partly cloudy skies, 69 degrees at Willard Airport in Champaign. Skies are clear, 68 degrees. The dew point, 50. Winds out of the northeast at 9 miles per hour. The humidity, 52%, and the barometric pressure, 30.35 inches and falling. And outside our studios on Friends Plaza, it's 67 degrees. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. It's one of the leading causes of death in the nation, killing more than 200,000 Americans each year. Yet a survey conducted this summer shows most in the U.S. say they have never heard of the term sepsis. That's something the Global Sepsis Alliance, a worldwide group of public health organizations, is hoping to change. This week, it marked the first annual Global Sepsis Awareness Day. As Illinois Public Radio's Peter Gray reports, a northern Illinois woman continues to suffer 4 years after sepsis nearly killed her, and many Illinois hospitals are working to improve their response so their patients won't have a similar outcome.
When 30-year-old Heidi Ottilie of DeKalb brought her daughter Olivia into the world in April 2008, she was healthy and had never been to a hospital before. There was no way of knowing her first cesarean delivery would also be her last.
It squashed my dream of having more than one child. I can't have any more biological children because my stomach wall isn't strong enough.
When she woke from a coma in May, doctors said a small cut in her bowel triggered a massive infection in her abdomen, which within days caused sepsis and septic shock, something neither she nor her family had ever heard of before. When told its early symptoms include high fever, things began to add up. She was running a fever for a week after giving birth and knew something just wasn't right, a feeling that haunts her today.
When I run a fever, I get really nervous. And anytime I hear someone's ill, I get really worried. I don't want to have to take medicine to be happy, but because of this experience, I don't have a choice.
Heidi is plagued with anxiety and depression on top of chronic abdominal pain and digestive problems. She can't lift her now 4-year-old daughter and doesn't know how to tell her she won't ever have brothers or sisters to play with. She's a survivor, but her body may never fully recover from the trauma of septic shock, an outcome Decatur physician Stephen Arnold hopes to prevent in his patients.
This is a devastating illness, and the people that survived before we started doing this were more debilitated, I believe, than the people that survive now. What we do in the first 6 hours can avoid a lot of that. And so you can really turn these people around in not only keep them alive, but improve the quality of their life.
Dr. Arnold says with sepsis syndrome, as with heart attack or stroke, time is tissue, and Decatur Memorial Hospital now treats this medical emergency as rapidly as possible. It's what's known as a sepsis protocol. Clinical quality consultant Kathy McDowell says the numbers show it's working for some Decatur patients.
When we first started and we looked at our baseline data at Decatur Memorial, we were at a 48% mortality, and with the initiation of our sepsis protocol, we were able to cut that mortality nearly in half in the first year.
Sometimes referred to colloquially as blood poisoning, infectious disease specialist Dr. Vidya Sundaresan more accurately defines sepsis as the body's systemic inflammatory response to infection that has reached the bloodstream. She says it has a wide spectrum of effects on the body, with fever and rapid heartbeat on one end and on the other.
There can be shutdown of different organ systems. The kidney can shut down. The liver can shut down. People may not be able to breathe correctly. And then the end of the spectrum is septic shock.
Sundaresan teaches at Springfield's SIU School of Medicine. She tells students that an infection from any type of organism has the potential to trigger sepsis. Those with weaker immune systems, recently born infants, and patients 65 and up are at an increased risk. Basic hygiene, she says, is key to infection prevention, both at home and at the hospital.
For patients that are coming in for surgery, it's not wrong to ask if somebody's washed their hands. Hand washing and hand hygiene, I would like to stress, is one of the biggest things that can control infections.
Back at Decatur Memorial Hospital, intensive care director of nursing Jason Grauer runs his hands under a no-touch faucet.
It's the infections that start of it. It's your own body trying to fight the infections, what leads to severe sepsis. It's your own body trying to win.
Patient room doors with wash-in, wash-out signs, alcohol foam dispensers at every entrance, this ICU is clearly pushing a culture of infection prevention. MRSA, a drug-resistant superbug staph bacteria, can trigger sepsis, and MRSA patient infection rates remain high, around 20%. Doctors and nurses are being pushed hard to make sure catheters, breathing tubes, and intravenous lines are sanitary and the environment clean. Heidi Ottoli of DeKalb, who 4 years ago beat the odds and survived septic shock, does what she can to make sure people know about the risks of hospitalization using her experience as a tool for med students at hospitals in Chicago.
Students come in sometimes when I have checkups and they hear my stories, so I'm glad that I can make people aware of sepsis.
And what does she tell her friends and family when she hears they may be headed to a hospital?
I tell them to trust their body. Doctors are great, but if you don't feel something's right, then you need to speak up. Or if you can't speak up, like I couldn't speak up, you need to have an advocate for you. And don't be scared to switch hospitals.
Reporting from Springfield, I'm Peter Gray.
Starting tomorrow, the state of California begins collecting sales tax for a wider number of items purchased online. California is the eighth state to pass a so-called Amazon tax, named after Amazon.com. And as KQED's Ardi Shahani reports, it's large online retailers like Amazon that are the main target.
It's not hard to find online shoppers these days. Take this hipster cafe in San Francisco's Mission District, where Shireen Askui opens her laptop and ticks off her latest Amazon purchases.
A watch I bought, a bunch of stuff for Burning Man, like glow-in-the-dark shoelaces, a bunch of different kinds of tonic water. I got a blender, a bike lock.
Next to her is Craig Sumner. He opens an Amazon invoice just to see how much sales tax he was charged on his last pair of Levi's.
Sales tax zero. So it looks like, you know, in this one example, it was not. I think on Amazon, typically, there's not.
That changes at midnight, when a new law passed by the cash-strapped state goes into effect. Every out-of-state business that sells over $1 million to California customers will now be required to collect sales tax and ship it back to state coffers. Before, that was only true of companies with a store in the state, like Target or Walmart. The web shopping behemoth Amazon lobbied hard against collecting this tax, arguing it wasn't its responsibility because it didn't have a store in California. Local mom-and-pop businesses countered that by not charging the tax, the corporate giant had an unfair advantage.
I think it's capitalism at its best. I think it's a market just shifting.
That's Jerome Horton, who chairs a state tax agency. He estimates California is losing $1.2 billion a year in unreported sales tax. Horton expects the new collection effort will recoup about a quarter of that. He's hiring a small army of new collectors and auditors to target companies that don't comply.
They're going to test our will to enforce the law. We're not talking about folks who make mistakes. You're talking about people who intentionally don't pay their fair share. Not a penny, zero, nothing.
Under the new law, it doesn't matter if an out-of-state retailer has a brick-and-mortar store in California. But, and here's the important caveat, Horton says they must have local contractors who bring in at least $10,000 in sales.
And so what many of the companies have done is that they chose to shut down their affiliates here in California.
That's exactly what another mega e-tailer, Overstock.com, is doing. President Jonathan Johnson says to comply with the law, he's terminating contracts with hundreds of California affiliates.
Overstock.com will always be a good corporate citizen, and we will collect tax any place where we have a physical presence, as long as that's the law of the land. California's attempts to expand that law aren't constitutional.
The main winners, at least for the moment, may be small online retailers who don't sell enough in California to collect the tax, like Silver Gallery in Waynesboro, Virginia. Last year, they sold about $300,000 in silver frames and flutes and trinkets to California. Still, owner Stacy Strawn fears it's just a matter of time before she'll have to collect, given that Amazon caved and similar proposals are popping up in other states and even in the U.S. Congress.
As bills like this begin to pass, and I hope they don't, businesses my size are probably going to give up, and you're going to have a lot less choice for your internet shopping.
Back at the cafe in San Francisco, another frequent Amazon shopper, Susan Landau, says it's not just about price.
It's still more convenient to shop online than to go to the store. So the sales tax isn't something that I worry about all that much. I think it's fine.
Landau plans to keep shopping online. For NPR News, I'm Arti Shahani in San Francisco.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's September the 14th, 2012. It was on this date, 1741, George Friedrich Handel completed the Messiah Oratorio. His librettist, Charles Jennens, had finished the text in July, gave it to Handel. Handel worked at a furious pace, composed from morning to night, and finished it. Messiah, which tells the story of Jesus' birth, death, and resurrection, originally written for the Easter season, debuted in Dublin at a charity concert the following April. There was a full house. 700 people came to hear it, and to make room for all of them, the gentlemen were asked to leave their swords at home and ladies to remove the hoops from their skirts. Messiah became one of Handel's favorite works for the rest of his life. Mozart supervised a new arrangement in 1789 and was reluctant to change anything about it. It's the birthday of Margaret Sanger, born Corning, New York, 1879, the woman who coined the term birth control and who founded Planned Parenthood. She was born into a working-class Irish family. Mother died at the age of 50 after 18 pregnancies. Margaret became a nurse, worked in the maternity ward on the Lower East Side. Many of her patients poor. Many of them ended up in the hospital from self-induced abortions. At a time when contraceptives were illegal in this country, it was illegal even to send information about them through the mails. Margaret Sanger wrote a series of articles called What Every Girl Should Know. Went to Europe, observed birth control clinics, opened one in the Brownsville neighborhood of Brooklyn in 1916. 9 days later, the police closed it down, arrested Margaret Sanger, who spent a month in jail. She founded the American Birth Control League, which became Planned Parenthood, and she funded research to create a contraceptive pill. And it's the birthday of Geraldine Brooks, born Sydney, Australia, 1955, author of four novels, including March, which won the Pulitzer Prize in 2005. She wrote it as a companion novel to Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. Geraldine Brooks, also the author of books of nonfiction, including Nine Parts of Desire, about Muslim women in the Middle East, and a memoir, Foreign Correspondence. She'd worked as a foreign correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Here's a poem for today by Tom Tomorrow, Closing the Cabin. In the yawn of dusk, we drift home in Minnesota autumn, reciting the litany once more, dock in, boathouse latched, rugs rolled, plugs pulled, windows hinged, floors swept, pilots out, pipes drained, faucets opened.